We have four argued cases this morning. The first is number 18-1831, Polaris Innovations Limited versus United States. And I'm going to try this. Ms. Hadzeminovich?
Yes, Your Honor.
Really? Okay, good.
May it please the Court. Azra Hadzimahmedovic on behalf of Polaris Innovations Limited from the Integrity Law Group. I would like to try to cover three separate issues today, one of them being the erroneous board's claim construction, the second one being if this court reverses that erroneous claim construction, then Lee, the prior art reference, does not disclose that the copies of the incoming clock signal generated by the regeneration circuit are of the same frequency under the correct construction as the incoming clock signal. And finally, provided I have time, I would like to and hope to cover why Lee also does not render obvious the copying of the command and address signals by the register. For that third issue, it is important because whether the court reverses or not the board's construction, which we hope the court would do, this third issue about the copying of the command and address signals is sufficient for the court to reverse the obviousness determination. Because if that limitation is not obvious, then there is no obviousness by Lee.
Do you agree that we do not have to address the claim construction argument if we assume your construction for purposes of addressing Lee and the obviousness issue on appeal?
If I understand your question, Your Honor, the board did address Lee both under the correct and incorrect construction.
But you're saying the correct construction being your construction.
Correct. The correct construction is the construction that the copies that go to the register have the same frequency as the copies that go to the memory chips. So the frequency of the copies going to the both elements, the memory chips and the going to the register, have the same frequency that is required by the claim language, the prosecution history, and so on.
So if we assume that's the applicable construction, do you agree we do not need to reach the claim construction issue? Would you agree with that statement that I made?
I would agree that the court could agree with our premise and then just go to the Lee discussion about the disclosure and see whether that is disclosed or not. However, we hope that the court would correct the construction because we do think it is incorrect. It's clearly incorrect based on both the claim language and the prosecution history. If I may, I'll briefly touch on why the board's construction is incorrect and move on to the second and third issues. I'll focus on two key issues. One is the claim language. It states the same term, the copies of the incoming clock signal, four times. And only the third time that term appears, the board decided it gave it a different meaning, that it can be the same or a different frequency that is being generated when it's being copied. That is contrary to the presumption that the very same term in the same claim has the same meaning. This is the presumption under this court's precedent. Now, the presumption can be overcome, but there has to be clear specification or clear prosecution history evidence to rebut the presumption that we think holds, that the same term, the copies of the incoming clock signal, have the same meaning all throughout. So the frequency that is being generated through the copies is the same. Here, not only is the presumption not rebutted, but both the specification and the prosecution history, and the prosecution history in particular.
I suppose in terms of BRI, which is the standard we're dealing with in this case, that it is possible to construe that language, the copies of the incoming clock signal having the same frequency as the incoming clock signal, as referring to the copies sent to the memory chips, right?
The copies sent to the memory chips, everyone agrees, have the same frequency.
No,
we
but
do
I'm
think it
that
is
that language having the same frequency could be interpreted as applying to the copy sent to the memory chip, only for those copies.
Respectfully, Your Honor, if we look at the prosecution history from which this particular claim language...
Before we get to the prosecution history, just in terms of the language on the face of the claim, that's a conceivable construction, right? It's a possible construction.
We do not think it's a reasonable construction. There is the antecedent basis. So you're looking at the limitation where the memory chip's copies are stated. If you look at the following limitation, it says one of the copies comes from the very same component, the regeneration circuit. That regeneration circuit creates both the copies that go to the memory chips and the copies that go to the register. The same component. And the claim states those copies. In the claim limitation for the regeneration circuit, when it talks about the copies that the regeneration circuit creates, whether to memory chips or the circuit, it says they have, in the definitional language, the same frequency. If I may quickly jump to the prosecution history, if there is any doubt about the claim language, and we don't think there is, the prosecution history clearly states multiple times at Appendix 587 and 588 that the entire module, and the entire module means the register and the regeneration circle, the entire applicant's module does not modify the frequency. On 587, it also says that the frequencies are identical across the entire module. And the memory module is the whole thing, which includes the register and regeneration circuit. So we do believe that the prosecution history is dispositive as to the question of why the copies on the whole module have to remain at the same frequency. I will just briefly touch on actually the petitioner's own expert admitting to this in reading the claim from the previous limitation to the next at Appendix 997, 126, 6-23, specifically saying, having looked at the above limitation, I agree that the frequency is the same for the copies that go to the register. I'll move on to the next issue, address it briefly. If the court agrees that the frequency throughout the module has to remain the same, then Lee does not disclose having the incoming clock signal copy that is supplied to the register at the same frequency. Green brief admits that the petitioner only had the argument about disclosure, not obviousness, for this limitation. And when we look at the disclosure, the only disclosure the court will see in Lee is expressly of half the frequency. Everywhere, it is called the WCLK divided by 2. Figure 4 at 745, Appendix 755 at 535-41. Both sides look at the same specs, sites, and the same figure. Repeatedly, only expressly WCLK over 2, which is half the frequency in Lee. The board tried to save this argument by looking at a broken claim, Claim 31. Claim 31 states that frequency can be X over N, N being an integer. We've shown that N cannot be an integer because if it's 0, it's inoperable. But moreover, we point the court...
I would suggest you wouldn't construe it to include zero, right?
Correct. And this is prior art. And prior art, according to this court's precedent, states that the claim does not decide and describe what is described in the entire patent. It is the specification, and this is in Ribeno and Corning Glass. It's the specification that discloses only what is described in the patent. So we should not rely on a broken claim for a disclosure that is really not within the scope of the specification. And there is a reason for it too. The petitioner's expert actually showed the reason. The reason is that Lee is interested in saving power.
We can't look to the claims of the prior art to see what it discloses.
Inri Beno and Corning Lee say that we have to find the description in the specification.
Do they say you can't look at the claims?
They don't say you cannot look at the claims. The claims are part of the specification.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
But they do not increase what is covered by the patent if that same thing is not described in the patent. And Corning Glass and Ribeiro say this. You have to find the description in the patent. There is no description that this is actually disclosed in the patent. I'm now in my rebuttal time.
Let me ask you one other question, though. Do you agree that the half-frequency signal is merely one embodiment?
We do not agree with that because it is really the only thing that is disclosed in the patent repeatedly. And because we are looking at a prior art, right, the prior art has to disclose it. There isn't an embodiment that discloses full frequency. If you're looking at the prior art to invalidate, you actually have to find that disclosure of the equal frequency exists. It does not exist in Lee.
And you think that it does not exist in terms of it when you're looking at the claims? I think this kind of adds on to the discussion you were having with Judge Dyke.
We do think, Your Honor, that that claim is simply broken, and that there is no support in the specification, in this description in the patent, that says that you would, in Lee, do X over 1, which would give you the same frequency. Claim 31 sets forth potential fractions. The only fraction that's disclosed is X over 2, the half frequency, and that's all that is in Lee. And their own expert said Lee purposely chose the half frequency because it wanted to save power. It is not concerned with what the 150 Polaris patent is concerned with, which is synchronization. So with different purposes in mind, this purposely chose X over 2.
So are you arguing that there's a difference in the claims in Lee with the embodiment in the specification?
Very much so, Your Honor. The claim, if read just with its own terms, could potentially cover X over 0, which is inoperable, X over 1, X over 2. But there is nothing in this particular Lee prior reference that tells us that X over 1 would work, that it's described at all, that it's at all within the purpose of the Lee prior art reference.
So what are you saying? Are we to give more weight to the written description as opposed to the claims?
We do believe that In re Bene and Corning Glass say that we would have to find the description of the same frequency, X over 1, within the scope of the specification. We do not see it in the specification. We see a suggestion in a broken claim. But it's not described. It's not teaching one of the ordinary skill to use it. And in fact, their expert tells us, I would think you wouldn't use it in the scope of Lee because in Lee, I wanted the half the frequency because I want to purposely save the power. That is their own expert.
So if we encounter any type of material difference in what's in the written description as opposed to the claims, then you're saying we should ignore the claim.
We don't always ignore the claim. The claims are part of the specification. But in this case, we do have to find a description of what that claim covers in the prior art reference. No one can find it. It is not in the scope of the specification, and the specification teaches only using the half frequency for a particular purpose that their expert stated exists.
Okay, we'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Mr. Ayers.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Peter Ayers on behalf of the United States Patent and Trademark Office. As the board recognizes, if this court finds that the Lee reference teaches a copy of the clock signal that's the same as the frequency of the incoming clock signal, it renders the claim construction issue moot. I'm happy to discuss that, but I think given the questions, I would like to focus first off on what Lee teaches. And I think Polaris wants to focus so much on the claims, but actually I want to refer the court to what Lee actually teaches, and this is at APPX 752, where it's describing figure 4 and this clock regeneration circuit that's disclosed in Lee. And what it says is figure 4 also illustrates how the W clock signal received at the PLL can be used to regenerate a local WCLK signal. Okay, it doesn't, it refers to it generically as a local WCLK signal. So I think, first of all, the premise for Polaris's argument that there's only teaching in the claims is just incorrect. We think that Lee teaches and the board found at APPX 26 that not only the claims, but also the specification of Lee itself describe more broadly a copy of the W clock signal. And then with respect to the claims itself, Polaris wants to focus on claim 31, but what I would refer the court to is claim 30, from which it depends. And again, what we see there is the copy of the clock signal described more and claimed more generally. It says, quote, regenerating an additional data write clock signal from said received data write clock signal. That's the WCLK signal. Again, referring generically to it as just an additional data write signal, not half the frequency, just a copy of that signal. And then in claim 31, to even drive that point home further, that this additional data write signal could be a different frequency, it says, oh, but it can also be a fraction of the frequency of that original data write signal, and then it gives a generic formula for that of X over N, where X is the frequency of the incoming clock signal and N is an integer. We know that Lee describes N equals 2, and all the board said is N equals 1 is sort of the base case. So we think that the board's decision is clearly supported by substantial evidence.
Does the record show us anything about the frequency of the clock signals in this technology?
No, it does not, Your Honor. And that is part of the challenge the board faced in this case, is the word frequency does not appear at all in the 150 patent, if that is what you're referring to as opposed to Lee. But the 150, the Polaris patent, as originally drafted, doesn't use the word frequency at all. And it talks instead about multiplying the clock signals, which is what kind of led to this confusion, and then an amendment that was added seemingly to clarify that multiplying didn't mean changing the frequency, but in the process introduced what we think is sort of a latent ambiguity about this one additional clock signal. And on that point, Your Honor, we do think that the board's construction is both reasonable and certainly broader than Polaris's. So
we assume that when we read the word signal as a clock signal, we're also talking about its frequency.
Yes, Your Honor. It has an.
Show me the authority to that.
In the 150, the Polaris 150 patent?
Yes.
Well, I think as my friend suggested, that the word frequency was introduced in the prosecution history itself. And if we turn to that, assuming I can find it here, starting at APPX 586, you see the remarks associated with the amendment, and that's where they talk about the frequency of these copies. But as we pointed out in our brief, this was a bit like two ships passing in the night, because what they were focused on was the copies that were quote-unquote multiplied. And the only signals that are multiplied in the 150 patent are the signals that are going to the memory chips. And so the focus there was on preserving the frequencies of those signals, both the clock signals and the command and address signals that were supplied to the memory chips. And that's what the claim reflects. It reflects that the copies of the incoming clock signals have the copies of the clock signal that go to the memory chips have the same frequency, and the copies of the incoming command and address signals that go to the memory signals also retain their clock, retain their frequency. And so that was what the amendment was made to do. Unfortunately, they also incorporated from this dependent claim this limitation about this one other copy of the incoming clock signal that's provided to the register circuit, and as a result sort of introduced this ambiguity. And again, we think that that ambiguity should cut in favor of the board in this case under the BRI standard, particularly here where Polaris had the opportunity to clarify that with a motion to amend, and they chose not to do so. So we think that the board's construction is certainly reasonable in light of the intrinsic record. There's also no question that it's broader than Polaris's, because the board's construction is, as we say in our brief, agnostic to what the frequency of the signal is, as long as it is sufficient to preserve the frequency of the incoming address and command signals.
How do you respond to the extrinsic evidence that opposing counsel pointed to on Appendix 997? The expert testimony.
Yeah, it's a little ambiguous, Your Honor, and that's what the board said. I wasn't at the deposition, but I'm crediting the board's reading of this, and they said when he referred to with respect to the quote limitation above, yes, that follows, that there's some ambiguity about what he was referring to. I don't know that I can really resolve that here, but I think the board considered that testimony and found that it did not move the needle. I mean, we're talking about extrinsic, ambiguous expert testimony under Vitronics, which is some of the least persuasive evidence. And particularly in the context of BRI, I think certainly the board was reasonable in taking that into consideration and considering that it was not persuasive on that point. I'm happy to answer any other questions the panel may have. Otherwise, I'll yield the remainder of my time.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Svanovich, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. 2 quick points. I urge the court to look at the specification of Lee. When it speaks to WCLK that the council referred to, it is speaking to the incoming signal. It is not speaking to the particular signal we're concerned about, and that is the one that goes from the regeneration circuit to the register. That is the one that is always and only described as WCLK over 2 in Lee at 735 to 41 and in the figure 2, only at half frequency, never at full frequency. My second point is, if I may, there is nothing ambiguous about the petitioner's expert's admission. He was walked through the claim, asked specifically about the claim limitation we're speaking about the one of the copies that goes to the register, and specifically said, considering the limitation above, where you see the definition of the copy being the same frequency, considering that limitation, yes, that follows. It follows that the one of the copies that goes to the register has the same frequency. With that, unless the court has...
What, if any, response do you have to opposing counsel's pointing to claim 30 as opposed to claim 31 in Lee?
It is really in the claim 30, it sets up the differentiation between the claim language for the WCLK and the WCLK over 2. The additional copies in claim 31 are the ones that we're concerned about, that they are the only ones that were being argued about, and those additional copies, the claim says, are at a certain frequency.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.